Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. And joining me inside the NEC is Larry Glass, Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. Larry, I believe you're also the Executive Director of Safe Alternatives for Our Forest Environment.
That's right, Tom.
Yep. So Larry splits his time between Humboldt County and Trinity County. And Larry will be on today to talk about this proposed East-West Railroad that SAFE and EPIC and the NEC are fighting. So welcome, Larry. I'm glad that you're here today.
All right. Well, let's go back a little bit in time for folks to give them just a little bit of a historical perspective of how this got rolling in the first place. First idea of this seems like it was being talked about again. I mean, it had been talked about 100 years ago, but more recently when our local eccentric millionaire Rob Arkley brought it up and started promoting the concept of a train to the east, since they were having so much trouble getting the north-south route to be taken seriously anymore because the tracks had caved in and fallen into the Eel River, and it was looking pretty doubtful that they get those tunnels open again or any of it. So
to back up, the north-south, that was an existing rail line that we did have, and it ran along the Eel River from where did it start, or where was the kind of the southern?
Oh, it went all the way down to the Bay Area.
And this was Burlington Northern, right?
Well, Northwest Pacific. It's had a lot of different operators.
And it ultimately closed because it just was not an economical rail line. The cost to maintain it were so high because we have these kind of steep erodible soils. It kept falling into the river. It was just kind of a nightmare in terms of its upkeep.
Absolutely. I mean, even when it was working, it was difficult. Like, they had to have somebody walk through the tunnels ahead of the trains to scout the tunnels out ahead of, or send them on those little, whatever those cars are called. But I think they had to actually walk through the tunnels ahead of time with a flashlight to check the tunnels before they could send the trains through them. So, yeah, no, it was a nightmare to operate. They didn't have a whole lot of customers. The timber industry had already kind of shifted and was not reliant on that kind of shipping anymore. They wanted to truck to directly to individual points. They didn't want to just send bulk stuff down on a train somewhere to have to be then offloaded and put back on a truck to get to its final destination.
So some of the rail lines that we see around here are vestiges of that old north-south rail line. Some others are kind of independent or unique. They connected individual mills to each other and whatnot. So you can still see a little bit of our rail history around. And a lot of the rail fans out there are very desperate to preserve as much of those old rail tracks as possible in the hopes that one day, somehow, some way, the railroad will be back.
Well, so, and many people remember the big fight over the rail yard in Eureka, also known as the balloon track. That was a big switching yard and roundabout and basically, yeah, I mean, it was just, that place was had like, I think, 13 tracks going through it. I mean, it was, that was the hub right there.
And now it's so toxic that nothing could ever be used again there, probably. So the East-West. So it was Rob Arkley.
About circa 2010, 2011, he started talking it up again. And then about 2011, a group of individuals approached the city of Eureka and then approached the county of Humboldt. Then they went to Trinity and Tehama and formed this entity called the Upstate Rail Connect Committee. That started meeting in 2012, and it was operating under an MOU between those people. And then they later added to that economic group called Upstate or North State. They were only part of it for a short while, but they were located over in the valley. Upstate Economic Development or something like that. and the Northern California Tribal Chiefs Association, which is an organization most people have never even heard of, including a lot of tribal members. But
including a lot of tribal chiefs.
They were a part of it.
And so what are these people trying to sell? Why this East-West?
Well, what they have always stated is that there's this pent-up demand for, particularly for agricultural products in the valley, to find a route to the Pacific rather than going south to Stockton or Sacramento or any of the Oakland or any of the ports down there. They wanted to go directly west. It's never been clear to me why. They've always had this sort of argument that, well, those other places are too congested and it's too complicated. This would be easier.
Part of it seems to me just wanting something. These are folks who probably were part of those middle class, blue collar job that, you know, once existed in Humboldt County in large numbers with the timber mills. And when those started to dry up and close down, they were looking for something else, it seems, that could kind of fill that niche. And, you know, looking around, we have this bay that could potentially have ships in it. And
well, that's important. That right there is the common denominator for everybody involved in this, except for the fellow that's the CAO of Tehama County that sat on the upstate committee. The rest of them were all people who were part of the sort of old guard that wanted to reindustrialize the port. They wanted big ships. They once looked into having it be a container port. They had to kind of give up on that idea, but they still want this port to be an industrial port.
And so obviously an industrial port, there's always going to be tensions with environmental groups when you talk about developing one of the best Pacific Flyway water resources that we have.
Well, and they call it a deep water port, which is kind of a misnomer, because the only reason it ever gets deep is because they dredge it.
Yeah, and they only dredge it to 38 feet, which not terribly deep. Okay, back to 2012, we have the creation of the Upstate Rail Committee.
And they started meeting at that time to try and facilitate having a feasibility study done. They wanted a feasibility study. And they started meeting. At first, they were meeting monthly, as I recall. And on behalf of the North Coast Environmental Center and SAFE in Trinity County, I was attending these meetings and actually at the time reporting back to even EPIC at the time as to what was going on, because in a lot of ways people looked at it and went, oh yeah, that's crazy, that's never going to happen. But at the same time, I felt like there needed to be somebody there from the environmental side keeping an eye on these guys. So I kind of appointed myself, since I have a vested interest in Trinity County, to be that person. So I attended all these meetings for all these years. Fortunately, they got to once a quarter meetings instead of once a month.
And it seems like the flame has kind of been diminished a bit in the passions of these folks. Looking back through the record, it looked like 2012, 2013, 2014 were really hot years for the pro-rail advocates. And while we've seen pro-rail advocates lose pretty consistently in local elections.
And I think that's important, Tom, right there. I think you hit on the important thing. They ran candidates for Harbor District every opportunity that they've had since 2010. And they've been pretty much turned out of office. Every candidate they have had that they promoted has been defeated.
And these have been pretty singular one-issue candidates, or so far as I've kind of experienced them to be. So we have a desire for a feasibility study. And a pre-feasibility study, as the rail fans like to call it, came out in 2013 it was produced for the Humboldt Bay Harbor District. What did that report generally conclude?
Well, much to their chagrin, that report basically said that it would cost at least $1 billion, if not more, and that there was a limited amount of commodities that would even be feasible to ship on it unless they did coal. And then if they did coal, there'd have to be, I think, 7 trains a day in order to make it pay. So it basically, the gist of that report was, this isn't going to happen anytime soon. It's too expensive and it's not very feasible. They looked at the grade in Trinity County, and in order to traverse Trinity County, you would have to travel twice the land miles, you know, in order to go in. Basically, say you needed to go 100 miles in a straight line, you'd have to go 200 miles because of the grade problems in Trinity County, because Trinity County is just all up and down. There's very little flat land in Trinity County, and trains don't like steep ground. They like to have a percent and a half grade is what they like to operate on.
Yeah, if that, and the higher percentage grade that you have, the slower the train's going to go. Same with the curves that you have. And with our kind of sinuous mountains and rivers that we have in our area, you're going to be making a lot of turns. You're going to be going up and down a lot, even if you try to minimize that by taking longer routes, kind of minimize the change in grade.
Or have to do big cuts into the mountain and bridges across gullies and rivers and creeks and in order to try and straighten things out and to lessen the grade.
And so just dollars and cents, the line doesn't seem like it would work out.
Well, that's what that study showed.
And in part, I think that we kind of can see that this is true already. It to the degree that capitalism actually comes up with efficient solutions to problems, if there was the market for such a train, you would think that there would be the train companies out there lobbying to get such a rail line connected. And, you know, they tried to put one in over 100 years ago and didn't get too far.
They talked about it.
Yeah.
And clearly that was at a time when if it could be done, those guys would do it. You know, these are the guys that invented steam donkeys to move logs and things like that. So if there was a way to have built that rail to the east, they would have done it back then, as somebody pointed out at the hearing the other day.
I think that was me.
Oh, okay.
and they would have had kind of different working environments too. Labor laws and environmental laws that would have made it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine that you can get something like this done in a cost-effective manner today just because of labor laws, just because of safety rights.
And we're talking about back at the time when they were using Chinese labor to do everything like that, and that was basically slave labor that they had. So,
and so even with slave labor, this didn't pencil out, it seemed like.
It didn't seem to go anywhere.
So the 2013 study concluded generally two things. One, it would be extremely expensive to build, over $1 billion at least. And two, because it was so expensive to build, and to maintain as well, with $20 to $30 million annual maintenance budgets. And because it would be so expensive to build and maintain, you would need to use it a lot. We would have to, Humble Bay would have to jump up and become one of the top ports on the West Coast to feasibly pay for such a rail line. And so, as you said, it was something like 7 to 10 coal trains a day, each train over a mile long. It would require substantial redevelopment of the bay, including additional dredging to a deeper level than we currently have. It would require near shore development to put in the facilities and infrastructure necessary to fill up your coal trains and whatnot. So the 2013 study was really damning when it came to the feasibility of this.
Oh, and the other thing too, Tom, that it for the folks that live in Trinity County is once the word of the study got out over there and copies of it circulated around, they identified basically close to the same three potential routes that the people 100 years ago that looked at it identified, which got everybody all worked up in Trinity, because these were through population centers, these were through wild and scenic rivers, these were through roadless areas, huge swaths of the national forest, and that really got people worked up. That, for Trinity County, that more than any of the rest of the details got those folks fired up.
Yeah, so we haven't really even touched the environmental issues, and maybe we should. So let's go there now. Train transportation is often thought of as a very green form of transportation. Generally, there are lower carbon costs associated with shipping things by train than by truck. But I think a lot of that analysis is kind of singularly focused just on carbon accounting.
And flat land.
And it doesn't think about the carbon costs associated with the building of a rail line or the conversion of, you know, thousands of acres of our national forest and private forest land into basically clear cuts forever. So there are some kind of deceiving things about this. And often what happens is the pro-rail line tries to hijack the environmental position. So can you talk a little bit more about the costs, the environmental costs a train line would produce?
Well, let's start out with the air. First of all, that because it's not on flat land, because they're pulling a grade almost the entire way through Trinity County, they're either decelerating and using the engine to decelerate, or they're using the engine to climb a hill, all of which pumps all kinds of diesel smoke out, far more than the obnoxious guy in front of you on Highway 36 when they step on it.
Right. Just imagine being behind a grow dozer, but multiplied many times.
Right. And that's what you've got with the air. And so communities like High and Palm, like Hay Fork, that right now have virtually no air pollution at all, would be suddenly faced with diesel soot and air pollution in their valleys. And particularly High and Palm and Hay Fork both have regular thermal inversions, which is a sort of a cap over the valleys that don't allow the pollutants to rise up out of the valley unless there's an afternoon breeze or something that breaks that inversion. So air pollution, absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that the rail lines have always had sort of carte blanche to just dump whatever they want to on the rail line. It's like sort of their property, the rail line. And so they always dump their latrines right on the rail line. If you've ever walked on a rail line and you see these masses of gray material on the rail line, that is the treated waste from their latrine on the train that's been dumped out on the tracks. It's amazing the stuff that they've gotten away with. I mean, that's another thing that was the problem with the North-South rail line. One of the other reasons they could never reclaim it again is they had polluted it so bad from all the dumping and spraying and spilling that they had done along that line that it was a toxic mess all in their right-of-way. So that would be the next thing I would point to, would be the right-of-way and the damage that would cause. The right-of-way or easement for the rail line, minimum 100-foot clearance, maximum of 1,000-foot clearance. We calculated that most of Trinity County would be on the upper end of that. So very little of it would be at the 100-foot. Most of it would be much bigger than that because, once again, it's not flat ground, and they want to have a clearance so that the tallest tree can't fall and hit or even come anywhere near a railroad train. And a good portion of our trees in Trinity County are 150, 200 feet tall. That's not an uncommon tree over there.
Yeah, you can grow them big.
So that would be a lot of clear cutting. It'd be huge swath. And like I said, double the rail miles versus a straight line in order to traverse it all.
And then we have water impacts too. So can you talk a little bit about what wild and scenic rivers this would cost?
Oh, yeah. So this would cross all routes, cross the South Fork of the Trinity, which is a wild and scenic river, and numerous important tributaries to the South Fork and Hay Fork Creek would have to be crossed. And those are both anadromous fisheries holding rivers and creeks. Hay Fork Creek and the South Fork of the Trinity. South Fork of the Trinity was named a wild and scenic river for its outstanding, remarkable value, which was its fish. And its fishes have been in great decline, but they're fighting their way back because of the industry has stopped doing what it was doing all the way up until the end of the 80s. It's recovering now, slowly. But it's been gradually recovering, but it's tough with drought years and everything else for the fish to come back. So if you have these huge swaths cut out of the hillside, you're going to have, once again, more sediment delivery. The other thing, too, is that the rail lines want the vegetation completely away. That whole right-of-way has to be clear of vegetation. So the only way they can accomplish that is with chemical herbicides, you know. So there'd be a huge amount of spraying yearly, maybe two or three times a year even, to keep all that vegetation down because of the fire danger. The sparks that come up from trains passing on metal wheels on metal tracks. So they would be spraying a lot. All of that would run right downhill. Everything in Trinity County runs downhill. I mean, that's just how it is. It's an up and down kind of county. So all of that would wind up in the river, and that would be a disaster for certain.
You are listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Larry Glass of the North Coast Environmental Center. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes left, Larry, so let's get into the Trinity County Transportation Commission and the vote that just was had. So can you tell us what was before the Trinity County Transportation Commission?
Right. So back last year, this Upstate Rail Committee had worked with Trinity County to submit a transportation grant application. I forget now the name of the actual grant program that they sustainable something with the state of California. But anyways, they applied to that grant funding for that grant funding. And to everyone's shock, because I remember when this happened, a lot of people showed up and spoke in front of the Transportation Commission, which is the Board of Supervisors. They just put on different hats, and then they're the Transportation Commission. Spoke at that meeting and said, no, we don't do this. But everybody sort of laughed and said, yeah, this is never going to happen anyway. And that was sort of the supervisor's attitude at the time. Yeah, you know, we're going to apply for this, but Caltrans is probably not going to award this grant to us. Well, big surprise, last July they awarded the grant to Trinity County for almost more than they asked for. So everyone was kind of taken back about that. And initially it was $245,000, and then later jacked it up to $276,000. A big surprise, and Trinity, I think, was kind of caught off guard by it. And all this time has gone by, and they'd never actually met as a Transportation Commission to accept the grant. They actually had to formally accept it. Okay, we're going to give you this money, and then the supervisors had to actually vote to accept it. Well, I think a lot of folks didn't realize they had never done that. And when we found that out, we started organizing around that and realizing, oh, here's our opportunity to say no loudly to this thing one more time. Because, of course, the concern is not that, you know, as I said in my testimony at the hearing, environmentalists usually love studies. That's what we're all about. We want everything studied. But in this particular case, as a judge that stood up pointed out, that this would open the door to this never going away. If once we started this process, we could be on a never-ending sort of opening of Pandora's box, as I put it, especially with the different administration in Washington that we've got now where everything's on the table.
Yeah, the Trump administration seems like throwing money at wasteful and stupid projects is their MO.
Well, $1 trillion in infrastructure spending was what was promised during the campaign. So when we saw that, we thought, no, we've got to put our foot down. We've got to say, no, we don't want to accept this grant, which seemed like a big uphill climb. To get a county as small and desperate as Trinity County to turn down, quote unquote, free money from the state seemed like a big ask. But as we went out to the community and organized, and thanks to EPIC's great assistance with their alert that went out that had attached to it an email response form, we got a lot of people's attention. That spread far and wide, plus networking out there that SAFE had been doing. We had a lot of people interested in the subject. So when the hearing happened last week, we packed the supervisors' chambers with folks. And they listened to what was almost 3 hours of public testimony.
I was trying to come up with a head count later on the drive home, and I think it was about 40 Trinity County residents opposed to this.
Yeah, they got up and spoke. I would say that's about right. And the four people who did speak in favor of it were all from Humboldt County, and they were all pro-port, pro-rail people that had come over there. Nobody in Trinity County spoke in favor of accepting the grant.
Well, can you tell, what do you think the benefits to Trinity County could have been, and what are the costs?
Well, that was the big selling feature that I think we had for our position, was that there were no benefits for Trinity County. at least no direct benefit for Trinity County, no business opportunity, no, there wasn't even a guarantee that the train would ever even stop, except we found out that they were going to have to stop because they have to change crews because the train would take so long to get from Eureka to Gerber that no one crew could work the whole route. They'd have to put another crew on. So we were thinking maybe they were going to stop in Wildwood, but of what benefit would that be to Wildwood? Just that the train crew gets on the train there. I don't think there was a whole lot of, maybe there'd be a burger bar or something that would set up there. I don't know.
So,
but no benefit to Trinity County and lots of potential harm to Trinity's environment. You know, the sound of a freight train has been studied, and it will can carry as much as 20 miles from the line. So 20 miles from either side of the track, people were going to be hearing a freight train. And I know from growing up, miles from a freight train track in Southern California when I was a kid, and that was miles away, that it would shake the house in the night when the train would go by. I mean, you can feel those, especially when they're all loaded down, heavy loaded freight cars.
Let's cut to the chase. How did the Trinity County Transportation Commission vote?
Well, that was very interesting. We thought it was going to be close, but it wasn't when Bill Burton, the downriver supervisor, made his motion to accept the grant. The rest of them just sat there and said nothing. So there was no second. So it died from lack of a second, which means the grant was rejected by Trinity County Transportation Commission.
And because the Trinity County Transportation Commission is also the Board of Supervisors, I think that this is a pretty clear and resounding no from Trinity County itself. And because the rail line, 60 to 70% of it would have to go through Trinity County, I think that this is going to cause our local governments, Eureka, Humboldt County, and the other smaller cities that have signed on to this, to reconsider, because the most important player in this does not want the train.
Well, and as you recall, there was a kind of a peripheral discussion around what if another county does it, and what if we wind up having to sue, and Trinity County seemed like, while they couldn't afford it, they were definitely going to be on board for fighting it.
And I should just make it clear, since we're on the radio, I'll make this very public. If a railroad ever does come to pass, if there's ever funding, Epic will sue. Epic will come and support Trinity County in fighting that rail line.
All right. Well, and speaking for everybody in Trinity County, thank you, Tom and Epic, for that. And I'm sure we can get some other big groups as well to sign on with you.
Well, thank you, Larry. This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Larry Glass of the North Coast Environmental Center about the ecological and social costs of a proposed east-west train line. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can also subscribe to the Eco News podcast on iTunes for your own listening pleasure, on the go listening pleasure. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as always, to Fred for engineering. Join us again next week, right here, for the Eco News Report.